We have people coming into the country, or trying to come in. We're stopping a lot of them. But we're taking people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals. And we're taking them out of the country at a level and at a rate that's never happened before. And because of the weak laws, they come in fast. We get them, we release them, we get them again, we bring them out. It's crazy. The dumbest laws, as I said before, the dumbest laws on immigration in the world. So we're going to take that.
Somebody get me through this nightmare. I can't control myself. Someone, if you can see.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. How very presidential. Where's Van Jones when I need him? Today he became presidential. Where are those idiots saying that stuff now? I got to be honest. This is a bridge a bit too far. These aren't even people. These are animals. This is coming from the president of the United States. Let me remind everyone, this is not normal. Just throwing that out there. But here's the thing. You've got people in this country who are buying this, and he's just lathering up the insane base. And at some point, the sane and rational amongst us have to be the ones who step forward, which is why I've asked Hassan Ahmed to come talk with us. He's a Virginia immigration lawyer, also a fantastic blogger over at typhoonical.com. Hassan, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, thoughts?
Well, yeah. I'll say this. I've been practicing immigration law for about 15 or 16 years, and I was happy up until the campaign trail and the election of 2016. Just kind of go to court and represent my clients and do one case at a time. But this type of rhetoric and the type of hatred that we've seen coming down the pike and just being engineered for maximum impact on target communities throughout the country, the communities that make us us, make America America, it's shifted the entire direction of my practice. And I think I speak not only for myself, but for a lot of my colleagues at the immigration bar as well. Because this language is dehumanizing language. That's the bottom line.
Right.
These people are seen as, and they're being reduced to less than human, they're being, which makes them easy scapegoats, easy targets for blaming anyone's problems, all people's problems on these people, these rapists, murderers, job stealers, terrorists, gang members, you know, whatever it is that you want to call them. And that's the reason why every single policy that you've seen pushed by this administration, whether it's revocation of DACA, whether it's the de-designating countries for temporary protected status, or splitting up families at the border, ramped up deportations, a travel ban, all of these things that we've seen just in the past year and a half, that's the reason why every road leads to detention and deportation, because deportation has become regarded as, seen as, the panacea, the cure-all for anything that you don't like. And that's a real problem.
Yeah, and the dehumanizing part of it, you know, the story that broke yesterday was, you've got the, which amazingly to me, you've got us looking at military bases to store children. I mean, we're creating child internment camps. At least they're talking about it. And when you have this kind of, they're not even people, Hassan, they're animals.
Yeah.
So you don't mind
right.
that, you know what, that's where they belong, on the military bases.
Right. And it's you know, these centers that they have, the detention facilities, which euphemistically are officially called family residential centers, even though they have barbed wire around them and are armed, patrolled by armed guards 24 hours a day.
Is that not Orwellian?
It's completely Orwellian, but this is the country we live in. People need to realize, and I want your listeners to realize, we are a country that jails women and children for seeking asylum. People who are fleeing persecution, we are a country that does that. This is what we do. And our tax dollars pay for it. I spent about a week at the South Texas Family Residential Center in Dilley, Texas, about 60 miles from the Mexican border in 2016, helping. You know, there's a program there where lawyers and other volunteers can go and sort of meet with people who are coming and prepare them for credible fear interviews, which is the first step in applying for asylum. And, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, but going down there and seeing the wave of desperate humanity, four groups of people, 35 to 40, 40 women and children each time. So, you know, a good 200 people a day that we would basically process and sit down and listen to story after story after story. And not a single one of them was saying, hey, you know what? I came here because I wanted to find a better job. I wanted to get a better life. Or things weren't, I was having a little trouble with upward mobility in El Salvador. No, that's not the reason why they were coming. I was talking to 10-year-old kids who were saying I was being forced to join MS-13 and I didn't want to go. That's what they were, that was the talk going on in the playground of a 10-year-old, you know? That's what these people were actually fleeing from. And to have them seen as, you know, called animals and called, you know, rapists, murders, and whatever else the administration is doing, it's, well, to borrow their own term, it's deplorable.
Yeah, it is. You know, I was watching one of the Fox talking heads, and I don't even remember his name, one of the idiots on the morning show. Right. And he said that, you know, he was talking to the blonde Laren, Tommy Laren, and you know, he was saying that back when her ancestors came, he said, quote, one group of people signs the guest book and says, I'd like to stay here and here are my credentials. The other group sneaks in. And immediately I began questioning. I go, okay, well, my family came here on a boat. They showed up at Ellis Island, and they went through the process. They, you know, they showed up. There was no, hey, pre-qualifying to get on the boat. There was none of that. People got on the boat, and they hurried over here. Where's our southern Ellis Island? Or did I miss that? Because, you know, look, a lot of people want to come here, and, you know, they want to come the right way. Where is that Ellis Island there? Because maybe I missed it.
You know, I've been practicing a long time, and I have yet to see it myself.
Because I think people want to come the right way, but I'll tell you right now, if I'm in El Salvador and I've got children, if I'm in Nicaragua, or I'm in one of those countries where you've got bad conditions and my kids could get killed, I'm coming here come hell or high water.
And that's what we see. That's exactly what we see. And I don't mean to say, by the way, that someone coming in to seek a better life, even if they're not getting, you know, threatened by a gang member on a daily basis, or they don't have their family members getting offed and hacked to pieces by gang members, there's nothing wrong with people trying to come and seek a better life. And if they're going to come and contribute something, if they have some skill that's needed here, if they have some desirable trait, why shouldn't our immigration laws function to make our border a tool for prosperity instead of trying to make it militarized? And that's really the whole, you know, you hear all this talk about border security. They don't mean border security. That's not what they mean at all. They're talking about border militarization. That's what they want to see. They want to see a high wall. They want to see snipers. They want to see people getting shot. They want to see people dying and unable to come in. And the real question that I always ask is, well, what's safer? What's better? A border that is protected by a wall, or a border that's so safe it doesn't need a wall?
The wall thing is just kind of amazing to me because, you know, it's, you know, at no place has it really ever worked. And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm quite, you know, heartened by the fact that there are so many people who are saying, look, if you build it, we're just going to tear it down. You know, I just interviewed a guy who's running for auditor in New Mexico by the name of Bill McCamley, who I hope he wins because, you know, great guy and an excellent video. Hope people will take a look at it. But, you know, there's going to be this movement, I hope, that brings us somewhere back together.
I hope so. And I'm doing my part, you know, to build as many bridges as I possibly can. And like I said, it shifted the direction of my entire practice to try to say, okay, look, there's people that understand that where this hatred and division is actually coming from, whether going down through the gun route or the transportation route or the healthcare route or the immigration route, there are people who are sitting around all day thinking up of ways to divide and malign people and create some version of America that exists only in the figments of their imagination, that never really existed. And it's up to the rest of us to understand. You were talking before, you know, about messaging, and you were talking before about manipulating the system for their own benefit. And that's very true in the immigration context. Why are we having this debate about building a wall and deporting, for example, Dreamers who grew up here and by definition don't have a criminal record, don't know any other country, and we're actually sitting here having a debate on trading their safety and security and future in this country for $25 billion to build a stupid wall? I mean, step back for a second and think about how inane this debate actually is, right? I mean, we have a population of 11.3 million undocumented people in this country, all right? 10% or less than 10% qualify as quote-unquote dreamers. So we're having this debate to provide not a pathway, but sort of like a tightrope to citizenship for these people, 10% of the undocumented population. And in exchange, we have to put up a wall that's going to cost $25 billion and won't work and never will actually get built. And while at the same time gut protections for 90%, the other 90% of the undocumented population, people who also have been here for equally long or even longer and have been contributing and paying taxes and raising families and being a part of our society, while at the same time clamping down on legal immigration. The RAISE Act, introduced by Senators Tom Cotton and Perdue, would have gut family immigration by 88%. You know, that was introduced, and Trump has been supporting, expressing strong support for the RAISE Act numerous times over the past year. So it really is a way to purge America of certain unwanted people. And that's, you know, it's a travesty.
Do you think it's that, or do you think it's just we need to have an other, we need to have someone to blame for everything. We need to keep the enraged, and when nothing actually gets done, because I said this after the 2016 election, to my labor friends, what are you going to do with all this anger when Trump doesn't actually make their lives better? He's only going to continue to give people, give something to blame. What happens then?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really valid point. I think this goes back to this idea. It goes back to sort of game theory. You know, you've got a unitary actor in the White House at this point, and they have an agenda, and they've got a, you know, policy standpoint, and whatever disagreements they may have amongst themselves, they execute it, and it's getting executed, and it's happening day by day. And I can't stop but think that the rest of us, everybody else who wants to see an inclusive America, an America that is welcoming, an America where anybody can come and prosper, we wind up, you know, fighting in our own little silos, and losing that opportunity to build bridges with one another and stand back and resist in a unified manner. I think it's a teaching moment for, or a learning moment for all of us.
But what do you say to the right wing who says, you know, we're not against immigration, Hassan. We want merit-based immigration. We want the best people. And I look at this Tommy Lahren quote, and it's one of those reasons that she's even on my radar right now. She said, you don't just come into this country with low skills, low education, not understanding the language, and come into our country because someone says it makes them feel nice. That's not what the country is based on. I got to be honest, my family came here 100 and some years ago, not knowing the language, not having any skills, and having very low education. I don't know what the hell she's talking about.
And she doesn't know what she's talking about, and that's the simple answer. What I say to her is, keeping families together and raising families is meritorious. That's what I would say. And I would say that whatever skill you're able to bring, whatever it is that you're able to bring to the United States, it has some merit to it. And it's not just your economic merit. You're bringing your culture. You're bringing your tradition. You're bringing your ability to work hard. You're bringing your grit. You're bringing your determination. All of those things are meritorious. And America has never been a country, we have never been a country where one has to come here, one has to prove their merit before they come into here. No, we're a country that welcomes you to come in and you prove yourself to get here.
Yeah, give me your tired. Give me your tired.
Your poor, your yearning. Exactly.
Yeah, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. But here's the thing, and I think you hit on culture here for a second. I think that's a big part of it. A lot of the people that I talk to who are the most anti-immigration folks are saying, well, you know, complaining that, you know, they're going to change us. And you go, well, sometimes that happens.
And is that a bad thing, first of all? But even assuming that it's that there is some sort of fear, 90%, and I've represented clients from, I actually keep track of the countries that my clients come from, and I'm at 115 countries and counting at this point. And if there's one thing I've learned by seeing this magnificent diversity and meeting people from all over the world and listening to them, is that 99% of what people want is exactly the same thing. But the differences, the cultural differences, that's like the that's the flavoring. That's the good stuff. That's the stuff that we need to savor and enjoy. That's what makes life enjoyable. It's what makes our culture enjoyable. It's what makes our country enjoyable. Our country is a microcosm of humanity like no other. That's a point of pride. And, you know, if people are saying, I mean, I give the example of my own parents. My own parents perhaps might not have made it into the United States. They were both physicians, okay, but they came from majority Muslim countries. They came into the United States. My father treated veterans at the VA hospital for decades. My mother treated North Carolina's mentally ill for decades before they both retired. And you know what? They did all of these things because that was their job and that's what they wanted to give to the country that they had immigrated to. And they did it while praying five times a day and reading the Quran every day, you know. So what's wrong with that?
Yeah, they must be really disappointed in you being a lawyer.
Yeah, I'm the black sheep of the family, unfortunately. So,
last question I've got, you know, how do we stop this? Is there a way to push back, or is this just electoral? This is why November matters.
That's definitely why November matters. I think it's a little bit of both. This is definitely a time to seize upon this energy and to move forward and to identify these, like, you know, points of solidarity and understand, you know, it's a time for us to do some deep reflection and to think about, you know, who we are as Americans and what it is that we want to actually protect. What concerns me is that the policies that are being put in place are not going to disappear, you know, with a new administration, or even a flipped Congress or a flipped House or whatever. And these feelings of xenophobia, bigotry, everything else that we've seen that's been uncovered, that's not going to go away either. So it needs to be asphyxiated. It needs to be starved of oxygen. It needs to be pushed back to the fringes of society where it belongs. And that's going to require some tough choices and some hard action. But, you know, I think that if we can rally behind and if we can create a clear vision of what America needs to look like, those of us that want it to be an inclusive America, those of us that are okay with the differences and embrace those differences and want to make this country into something that where anybody can come and prove themselves and contribute, we need to have a clear vision, and as long as we have a clear vision, I think that that's the vision that's going to win the day.
There you go. Good stuff. Hassan, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much for your thoughts.
Hey, absolutely. My pleasure.
Good stuff. Look forward to talking to you again real soon. You want to check out his work, typhoonical.com is the blog space where you can take a look at. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Possession, the gravity deep in the earth as an emblem of the dissolution, internment of their public liberty. Someday, somewhere,
exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.